Thank you for joining us, and thank you for being our co-moderator today. I appreciate that.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us for this month's TA Conversation Circle. Today's topic is on royalties. Our co-moderator today is Joe Rust, CPA, CFP, accountant at PragerMeadows CPAs. Sorry if I pronounced that wrong. For those of you who are new to the conversation circle, this is meant to be an open sharing discussion, so please unmute and share if you can. If you're unable to, please feel free to share your thoughts in the chat or just listen in. Unless you're sharing, please remain muted so that we can prevent any background noise. Before we start, please enter your name and writing discipline in the chat so we get to know each other. Then, while everyone's putting their names and disciplines in the chat, if anyone would like to open up with the first question, feel free to do so. You can unmute and talk anytime. Feel free to chime in. And if anyone else has a question that you have an answer to, or you have a similar issue, feel free to also like chime in after them and share your experience and anything that you've, any sort of solution that you've found yourself. Hi, Tara. Hi, Diane. Hey, Joe. Jamie. Susan. If no one has a specific opening question, that's right too.
Actually,
Oh,
I've
hey.
got a lot of questions. I'm Sarah Preble in Hawaii, and my husband and I wrote a textbook in 1972. I think the first edition was 73. We took on a new co-author. It's called Art Forms. It's used for Art 101, mostly in community colleges, a few high schools, a few universities. At one time, there were 300 schools on the adoption list. We got totally burned out on it. I did the picture permissions for 500 pictures, and that was just a whole job in itself. It has been bought and sold and bought and sold, one publisher to another. The 12 editions, almost all have different companies on the spine. Clearly, the publisher makes a lot of money on it. Once, by mistake, somebody handed out the whatever the publishers call it that is their financial anticipation. And we've had quite a time with many publishers, and now they're coming at us to sign for the 13th edition, and it's now called Preble's Art Form by Art Forms by Patrick Frank, revised by Patrick Frank. And he's agreed to all sorts of things. He's in a totally different position than we are. And Pearson, now the publisher, is proposing a switch from the stair-step royalties of 10, 12 and a half and 15 to a flat across the board 11.7. And my husband and I get 15% of the royalties, however they're determined. And we split that separate checks, seven and a half. And has anybody else encountered an abandoning the stair-step royalties and going to a flat rate? Our stair-step, I think, I can't remember whether it's 20 or 40,000 copies have to be sold before it flips to the next rate. And now that it's mostly electronic and community college enrollments are declining, I turned them down flat initially. My husband is disabled. He has Alzheimer's, so it's me. Does anybody else argue with
I can
publishers?
address this, Sarah, if you'd like. I also have a book with Pearson, and they two books with Pearson that have been out since the 70s, and they tried to get me to sign a new contract with them to lower the royalty rate, and I refused to do it. And they were really upset with me because I had found that they owed me over $60,000 because they had shorted me on royalties for 4 years. And now I have to check every single line item because Pearson is unlike other publishers. They do something called a weighted average, but our contract was on list price. And so I refused to sign a new contract on weighted average. And they finally gave up. And you just have to stand your ground with Pearson. They can be tough at negotiating, but I just stood my ground. I said, no, I'm not going to sign the new contract. And you owe me this money. And I've hired an attorney. It's your choice what you want to do at this point. So,
oh, great. Well, that's so helpful.
So I just want you to know, we've been with Pearson for a very, very, very long time. And we've sold 6 million books with them. So, and they're still trying to screw around with us.
What is the book?
It's the Anatomy Coloring Book.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people probably know that book. It's in 13 languages. And the other problem with Pearson, if other people probably have this, is that they moved it to an ebook. And also, we found 4 different people or organizations infringing on our rights by putting a PDF copy of the book online for free. One was selling it for $6.99. One was giving it away for free. And I tried to get Pearson to intervene with their attorneys, and they would do is send a cease and desist letter. So I had to hire an attorney to stop people from putting our book online for free.
Wow.
Yeah, Pearson is not my favorite publisher.
No, not mine either. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, for 6 years now, I have never gotten a royalty statement that is correct, that they haven't owed me more money.
Well, it was some time ago, but I called them on, I think, 12 royalty checks and statements, and I found they had shorted us on 11.
No question. They shorted me every single time.
But it wasn't Pearson at that time. It was other publishers.
Aloha, Sarah. So thanks for sharing that. And because your contract was written in like 1972, it may not have contemplated some of the formats that are being distributed today. Digital.
Well, and I knew that because I had owned a digital company for 27 years. So
there you go.
When I wrote my new books, I made sure that I have higher percentages on digital rights than was in the original contracts. You're absolutely right, Joe.
Ours is based on a 1991 contract.
Okay.
Ours is a 1978 contract. You should see it. It's hysterical. It's like 4 pages long.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not a lawyer, nor do I play on one on TV, but I see Brenda has joined us and Zick from Archstone Law Group. So if ever they ask you to sign a new contract, I would strongly encourage you to have counsel first before you do anything like that, especially since your contract might be more favorable than anything that they're going to be sending you now.
Right.
Yes. The last few editions, 5 editions maybe, have been a 1-page amendment to that 1991 contract. Yeah.
Well, one of the things, this is Zick. I don't know if you can see me or not. I can't see you.
I can.
Oh, good. Okay. Hope I look okay because I can't see myself. But another thing that Pearson and all the other big textbook companies are doing right now that is not very transparent on your royalty statements, except possibly to people like the two of you who scrutinize them so carefully, but it's very, very difficult to get at this, is that in the editions, in the ebook editions that include bells and whistles that are called, what does Pearson call them? MindTap and other things of that sort. And many of the sales in many of the fields are mostly of those sorts of MindTap and McGraw-Hill Connect and Cengage, whatever they call it. What they do, without necessarily making it clear at all, is allocate that some portion of what they sell as MindTap is your book, and you will get your royalty on that. And some portion of what they sell as MindTap is their own creation, and they don't think that is royalty bearing. This is very, and so you don't get your royalty on that. And the percentages vary. This is the topic of 2 ongoing class action lawsuits that some of you know about, one against McGraw-Hill, one against Cengage, It just so happens that after a year and a half, the Second Circuit in New York, which is the Court of Appeals, has actually come out with its ruling just today. I haven't finished reading it in the McGraw-Hill case, but it's quite significant. They held, they sent it back to the lower court in a way that favors the authors. In that case, can the companies do this? Can they do this kind of allocation of your royalties? And the Cengage case has recently been settled as a class action. So there's a lot going on, but Pearson, to my knowledge, hasn't been sued in that way. But again, this is at least as significant as, and you're right, and it's not just Pearson. They often do get it wrong, and it just so happens that 9 out of 10 times that they get it wrong in their own favor. Once in a while, they get it wrong in your favor, but that's pretty unusual. But this whole business about how they are selling, marketing, and paying you for these, I sometimes call them bells and whistles edition, is a very, very significant. They are unilaterally interpreting old contracts that did not contemplate this kind of thing at all. But rather than going back to you and saying we need to work something out, they have unilaterally, and this applies to I believe all the big companies, and applies to Macmillan also, all the big companies have done this in more or less transparent and often less transparent ways.
Yeah, thank you, Zig. That's exactly right. These other, programs like MyLab and Mastering and Pearson Plus all have a dilutive effect on the
Yes.
royalties that the authors are receiving because they are combining it with what they consider to be non-royalty bearing, content. And hopefully this will set a precedent. And you said the McGraw-Hill case was sent to the lower court. Hopefully there'll be some precedent set, on that favorable to the authors so that we can rely on
What the McGraw-Hill court said today, and this is one of the two or three most important courts in the country, certainly one of the one or two most important courts in the country on publishing matters. It's the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. They found they agreed with what the authors are saying about something that is probably in all of your contracts, which says something to the effect of, this is a bargain, and our part of the bargain includes we will publish the book at your expense. Excuse me, we will, that's what it has come to be. We will publish the book at our own expense. We put covers on it, we buy paper, we buy ink, we do all kinds of things. In some people's contract, it's absolutely clear, explicit that we also do ebooks at our own expense, but even if it isn't so explicit, that's what the contracts say. They publish the books, whether it's in print form or ebook form, at their own expense. And the court just today said, judge in the court below, when you threw out this case, threw out the author's case, you were wrong because that provision. They seem to be violating that provision because they are doing these ebook versions with bells and whistles, and they're charging you for it because they are apportioning your royalties. They're charging you for things that should have been done at their own expense.
Are
So,
they actually, are they, Zick, are they actually charging you for the cost of production, like, or distribution fee, or are they just simply reducing royalties
no, I
because?
think, and because this case just came out, and I haven't finished reading it, but basically, no, they're not, except in special cases where they do impose some charges on authors for their photographs or whatever else. But in general, no, they're not charging you. But what they are doing, what they are in effect charging you by saying we are only going to pay because of the fact that we have put it on this ebook platform, which the authors would say is pretty much the same as we put it in this. This glossy cover or whatever we did, because we sell it on this ebook platform, which has no real value other than to contain and distribute your book. They are violating the provision that we will publish at our own expense, which is the main thing that the publisher is supposed to do. So I haven't finished reading the opinion. It's by a very famous judge. I think this is worth knowing. Her name is Amalia Curse. She's probably 90 years old. She remains active. She was one of the first Black women federal judges in the United States, and she's an international bridge champion. She's a brilliant woman, and she took on, and it took a very long time too. We've been waiting a year and a half for this decision, but it's a very important decision, and I will report further, Brenda, and I will report further on this to the group after we actually read it and assimilate it. But that it is, sorry for meandering, that is to the point about the other thing that they do that's quite of a piece and in addition to what you're talking about in the Pearson case.
Thank you, Zick.
Thank you. What timing that's today too, that you can share it with us
Well, it's on
on
the
topic in our
you can get the case if you simply Google Second Circuit decisions and go to a case called Flynn versus McGraw-Hill. It's there. But at some time within days, I think Brenda and I will probably send something to TAA about it. We've sent things before about these cases. And we will also be sending everybody something. Some of you are Cengage authors. I don't know if any of you here are Cengage authors. Some of you are, without having to do anything, members of the class action, which has just been brought by authors against Cengage, which has just been settled on terms that have not yet been announced, but will be in about a week. So there's a lot going on there too. And all of this does have reverberations as to how Pearson and McMillan and others are handling these things, because gradually the law is catching up with these situations. Very gradually, very slowly and gradually, the law is catching up with these situations.
The law always lags behind technology, always has, always will. And so, they're not going to self-legislate. And so, yeah, sometimes it does take these court cases to kind of bring clarity to it. I mean, this has been going on for a long time in the music industry. My background is more music royalty audits and film and TV, but they've often put together package deals. The motion picture studios would put these hits in with, like, My Dog Skip, this horrible movie, and then they would allocate some of that revenue to these movies that are not in profit participation and never will be in profit participation, but deprive, the actual copyright owners or the content creators their royalties on their hit movies. So this has been going on for a really long time. It seems to be have been, late in catching up, but it's happened in the book publishing arena now too.
Janet, did you have a question?
Yes. So I have three books from that were published with Routledge. One was originally published with Stylus, which was acquired by Routledge, and they swallowed them up to for AI without, any permission agreement, even notifying the authors. And I've been in communication with somebody there, and it's been very hard to get any kind of information about, like, well, what are you doing about royalties? I mean, I would not have agreed, to begin with, to have my books used in this way. I don't really want my stuff chopped up and spit out with garbage they scraped off the internet. But there was no choice for opting out. So now I'm in communication with my other publisher, Sage, where I used to work until recently. Are you seeing any models for how publishers are handling royalties? Because the guy who is like a senior leadership person at Taylor & Francis said, well, we're not doing it on output. So I was like, well, if it's not output, then is it input? Because, like, I haven't seen anything. So I just wondered if you had, seen any models that people are using, so that at least if I'm talking with my publishers, I can say, well, hey, how about this?
So, Janet, is this an issue where they're training a large language model or some sort of
Oh,
AI-based
yeah.
content? Okay, so this comes down to fair use, and again, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm going to let the lawyers opine on this. But the question is, if I read every physics book in the world and I become a physics expert and I write my own, physics textbook, as long as I don't plagiarize anyone else's content, that could be argued as fair use. However, if you're training a model based on every single copyrighted or, published, book out there, is that fair use? And I'm biased, and I would argue it's not. I think that authors need to be compensated to train a large language model or an AI model based on your content that you created. And this is a huge issue right now in the music industry because there's a lot of generative music out right now that has no human creator. The Copyright Office has already held that you cannot copyright something that doesn't have that was not created by a human author, that doesn't have a human component to it. So I think it really comes down to a fair use argument. And I wonder what Zick or go ahead.
Well, I'm not a lawyer either, but I have studied this, and like doesn't look like fair use to me. But in any case,
I agree with
in
you.
this situation, they have said, oh, because I was kind of like, gee, you must still be partying with that $10 million you got off of our content without, renegotiating our agreements or doing anything. And he was like, oh no, well that money will go to the authors in royalties. So then I'm like, okay.
So,
How exactly?
Janet,
And
the
then they're like, haven't figured it out yet.
well, it sounds like the Rutledge people and maybe the Sage people have entered into some kind of a license agreement with some AI companies, and they are getting money. And the question is, how are they sharing that money with the authors? What Joe is talking about is that many people are many AI outfits may just be taking entire libraries and putting them in without getting any on the ground that perhaps that it's fair use. This is another case where the law has not yet caught up with this. But and then so that's my first question. It sounds like in your case you've been told that Rutledge is getting money. They have a deal.
So Taylor and Francis, which owns Routledge, they have made deals with two big AI companies, and like I say, they are saying that they are going to pay royalties. Now, the conversations that I'm having with Sage, where they have not made any deals yet and they have not decided what they're going to do, they have said that they would allow authors to opt out. They want to respect authors. I am a Sage author and I worked for Sage, and I think, I can't say what will happen. They're deliberating with this right now, and I agree. I'm a blogger, so I know they've taken. I know the AI has like just swept up everything, all my videos and all my blog posts. But in this case, what I was just wondering was if any of you had seen any models for, like say, when the company has licensed the content
We
and they
haven't seen
are
models.
saying that they're going to pay royalties,
Yeah, no, we
but they
haven't seen
haven't seen
models.
to
Now,
like how.
Brenda has done some, but I don't know how much of this is public information. Some negotiating on behalf of authors on their contracts, because the contracts, the existing contracts, I think you're pointing to another area where the existing contracts don't directly address this. And one could have all kinds of arguments about how the existing contracts relate to it. Now, Brenda, you've talked to some publishers about putting this into contracts or amendments to contracts for authors like yourself, Janet, who are very concerned about it. As far as I know, Brenda may correct me. There's no existing model. The existing contracts don't really address it.
Well, two things I would say. One is, we had a somewhat not similar situation, but in terms of how to calculate royalties on a new form of delivery some years ago with the the Pearson Plus or the those universes of content, like a Netflix model. And eventually, some of the publishers have come up with a description of how they handle the allocation of royalties in those situations. But it came partly due to a lot of pushback from authors. in requesting that. You know, I think that AI, in some sense, there's a lot of areas where this could arise. It's partly this kind of licensing model, Janet, that you're talking about. There's concern about, you know, that a lot of publishers want to use AI to generate your ancillaries and so forth,
mm-hmm.
And want to have freedom to do that. And then there's concerns of, are they going to kind of use all our content to create the Uber textbook? And then that's, you know, arguably not using any copyrighted work in it. It's all newly generated, but it's based on yours. You know, in my experience right now, you know, publishing, as makes sense, want to have maximum freedom to explore all these things with minimal restrictions. You know, and you certainly, you know, you want to build in as much consultation right as you can get, that you're aware of when they're going to be using it, you know, or using your works in AI or licensing your works for AI, and that you will be fairly compensated for it. And, you know, that gets into the particulars of, you know, your contract and so forth. But, you know, we're trying to put some stopgap measures in some contracts when we can, but the challenge always is the publishers want to be able to explore this new technology. And some of it may be beneficial for your books to, you know, in terms of generating these kinds of, you know, ancillaries, at least first drafts, that can be very useful. But it's also trying to make sure that you have quality control over what ultimately comes out of these technologies. But as far as the sort of licensing to outsiders to generate, you know, to use your AI in right. programming, I have not seen that yet addressed in the contracts.
Brenda, you ever see a catch-all phrase where any other exploitation will be paid at this rate? Because obviously this was never contemplated. AI was not contemplated when many of these contracts were, you know, entered into.
Not really. I mean, it's more how you, because contracts usually break out the base sale of the work versus the ancillaries versus something like Pearson Plus. So I haven't seen just sort of a catch-all for any other exploitation will be at X rate, because again, it sort of depends on what universe it's in, right? And so like on the Pearson Plus, the argument was always, well, if yours is in that catalog and nobody ever accesses it, are you getting royalties on it? Or is it only if somebody accesses it? And if so, how much, how many students? So I haven't tried to get them to agree to a one size fits all, and I don't think it would fly.
I'm just thinking of legacy contracts, whether there's anything to rely on.
I think Joe, there sometimes are things like that. I think that where it says, okay, your domestic rate is, 15%, your foreign rate is 10%. Your rate for certain other kinds of licenses, ABC, is 5%. And for anything else we haven't thought of, and it's usually a very small amount for anything else we haven't thought of. And it probably isn't even clear whether that anything else could include licensing to AI, but that there may be something like that I think some contracts might have that kind of a residual thing to it.
Thank you, Zach. So I think that there can be a licensing model that makes sense, as Brenda made the point that some of this can in fact be beneficial, and we do want, you know, publishers to be able to explore and try to maximize revenue for both themselves and the authors. It's just, I think you make the very important point, you want to have assurance over quality control, and that they're not just, you know, cutting you out developing this Uber book, you know, that you don't have any input into. So,
Joe, I have a question I wanted to ask a really smart CPA such as yourself.
I'll try to find one for you, but go ahead.
Yeah, which is, and it may be just based on a few of the questions that people have asked about books that were started many decades ago. And it has to do with income taxes for authors. In general, as I think you all know and would agree, authors enter into publishing contracts, they license their work, they get royalties, and they pay regular
ordinary income tax.
Income tax. Some authors sometimes ask, well, this says something here about royalties. That's different, but it really isn't. Those are oil and gas royalties. They're not book royalties. So basically, book royalties are ordinary income. Some authors, like perhaps some of yourselves, are being asked now about the possibility of a buyout by your publisher. And the publisher, instead of continuing to have you take any part in your book at all, the publisher will buy back your contract, buy back anything of your copyright that the publisher doesn't already have, take care of finding someone else to continue your book, and it's all for a flat amount. The flat amount is probably, and some authors really like that idea. I'm ready to retire. I don't want to have to worry about who is going to be revising my book. Leave it to the publisher if that publisher is willing to pay me a sufficient amount, equivalent to maybe what the royalties I would be getting for some number of years. I don't, has that come up for any of you who might want to share that? Have any of you either done buyouts or talked about buyouts? Well, it comes up with some of our clients. My question to you, Joe, but I it's it may be a something you would have to look up. And I've only gotten not very far with it so far. You do a buyout. How is that taxed? Can that be taxed as a capital gain or not? Because as many of you know, the capital gains tax rates are quite a bit lower right now, and they will continue to be lower no matter what happens more generally with taxes than the ordinary income rates. So if you can get X amount of money in one fell swoop and treat it as a capital gain, you may be well ahead. Do you have any thoughts about that, Joe?
Sure. I mean, this happens in the music royalty business all the time. Catalogs are bought and sold. Songwriters will sell their, songwriter share or even publisher share, to another publisher. And there was a period of time in the law where there was a capital gains treatment on the sale of self-created copyrights. And, the tax rate could be 20% versus 37.5%. So it's a very favorable tax rate. I would have to look into book publishing royalties because not every single copyright is treated the same. You mentioned oil and gas or book publishing versus music publishing and, also the timing of it. So there was a time when everyone was selling because of the favorable tax treatment. I think that law has, at least that part of it has a sunset. But I could look into, book publishing and see whether there is capital gains treatment. But it's a fair question and certainly one you should be thinking about if you're contemplating selling your rights.
There's a in the tax code where capital gains are defined, there is a specific and music is treated somewhat differently. There's some special things that I think the music industries must have lobbied for or against in this. That's a little bit different from the kind of copyrights that people here have, but it does say that a sale of a copyright of work that was personally created
Created, correct.
by
That's
the
the distinction.
taxpayer does not get capital gains
That's
treatment.
right.
If it is personally, most of your copyright interests are personally generated by you, and therefore you might not be able to get capital gains treatment, but it's a little bit complicated in terms of just how this has been applied. And just for example, some of you may do work as a corporation or an LLC. Most of our clients are not, but some of you may be. Would that change things?
Yes.
Because the way that the words are usually used, personally created by the tax, a corporation is not exactly, a corporation is a person for some purposes, but there's a lot of uncertainty here. So, Joe, this is something that it might actually be worth looking into further for some people as they do get into buyouts. Some publishers may be interested in buying out who were not interested a few years ago. Some of this is way over my head in terms of how it affects the way the publisher's own accounting and profits and why they would want to ever do it that way, but they sometimes do.
Yeah, and everything you're saying rings true. If it's in a corporation, they don't have the concept of capital gains, it'd be ordinary income. And most professional songwriters historically were ineligible for capital gains treatment because they considered them to be, you know, professional creators and held their work out, mm-hmm. much like any kind of business or inventory. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was precluded from capital gains treatment, except for that period of time in the law where they did allow, you know, songwriters at least to have capital gains treatment on the sale of their,
yeah.
their at least their songwriter share.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. But I'll be more than happy to look into it.
I don't know how many people have, I mean, we're set up as a subchapter S corp, and I run all the royalties through the business and run all the business expenses through the business. So I don't take it as ordinary income. I do take a little bit as ordinary income because my accountant forces me to do that. But I try to write off as much as I can against the royalties.
What I think your accountant's probably having you do is at least pay yourself a reasonable salary.
Right.
So that's probably what he's talking about. And there has to be, you know, reasonable compensation. And that's subject to payroll taxes. And that's why, you know, we tend to try to minimize that or pay a reasonable amount. The rest flows to you as a distribution. So as you take your royalties in through your S Corp, you pay your expenses, whatever the net profit is, flows through to you on a K-1. Right. It's a pass-through entity. So correct. It just passes through the S Corp to you directly, except for what you take as wages. And that's on a W-2.
But so I think I get a lot more write-offs than if you're just taking it as ordinary income.
Well, you get a lot more write-offs if you're as an individual, because right. there's more opportunity to put through other kinds of deductions and pension plans and all sorts of strategies. If you're just simply getting a 1099 as an individual, yeah, you're right. You're very limited in terms of what deductions you might be able to take.
Right.
So fair point.
I would like some clarification. I realize publishers of textbooks generally own the copyright, but the creators have intellectual property rights, and this contract that I'm dealing with amendments to or have dealt, the last one was 5 years ago. They let a long time go. It's a little vague, and the implication is that my husband's and my small share of the royalties will be inherited by our heirs after we die. And that's come up with the fellow who revises it now, doesn't have any heirs, and he's ready to sign to just when he dies, his share of whatever is gone. And some new person will come in and revise the book that has come to be called Preble's Art Forms, and we're still alive. We're not even dead. Helen Gardner's Art Through the Ages didn't get that sort of treatment. It was just plain Art Through the Ages, and then she died, and it became a Yale faculty committee book, I think. And now it's called Gardner's Art Through the Ages. So if you look it up, you have to start with G to find it in a catalog. Is this a standard thing? For royalties to continue to the estate of the deceased?
That's certainly my understanding.
Yeah, This is often spelled out in contracts, you know, because you've done the work on it that right. The royalties, as long as those books are selling, will go to you. And if not you, then to your estate. There's a whole lot of other questions about, you know, the rights of revisions once you step off the book and those kinds of things. I mean, I'm mindful that this is a discussion of royalties, and so we don't want to get into too many copyright questions. But but that is definitely very standard. These contracts, I mean, what they're also trying to say is the only thing your heirs can do is get the royalty stream. They don't get rights to pick your successor or do the edits themselves or other things. So that's kind of why
The contract spells that out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right. There are restrictions, but even if there are no heirs, you can leave it to charity too. But those rights do pass.
Right.
Charity.
The contracts may also say, most of them do say something. The exact words matter, but it may say something like, If and when none of the authors, such as Sarah, you and your husband, at some point, if you're not revising the book, and someone else is brought in to revise the book, with or without your consent, that's another thing that could be addressed in the contract. You may be entitled to you or your estate, whoever it is, may be entitled to 50% of the royalties in the first edition that you don't take part in, 25% in the next edition you don't take part in, 10% in the third edition which you don't take part in, and after that, nothing. And those numbers are not those numbers are sometimes found in contracts. Sometimes there are other numbers. That's one of the things we actually try to negotiate for authors, so that the numbers are higher, so that if someone else takes over your book after 20 editions, and you shouldn't be cut by 50% in the first edition you don't take part in. You should be cut very little in the first edition. But there's often a formula like that,
Yeah, if that
guaranteeing
was
you
spelled
or
out.
your estate a certain amount, even when you're no longer taking part, whether you're alive or deceased.
Yeah, we worked with him and we got 70% of the one we worked on together. And we agreed to the step down,
Exactly.
ending at 15%. Oh, interesting. But it's not an industry shift to this flat rate. I think it's 11.7% for all. I assume it's all media. They do very few. The books are all rentals. They don't even sell it anymore.
Well, some of the publishers would like to would like you to go to a flat rate in all media, and some authors would like it also. It's certainly maybe simpler, but you have to be quite careful about that, because to compare, sometimes the publisher will tell you, I think this will be pretty good. It's kind of a blended rate for the different products. It's less than your highest, more than your lowest, and we think it'll be good. But you really have to look at it very closely to see whether that flat rate, how
Yeah.
that would compare with your existing contract. Because the
Yeah.
fact remains, as some of you have already talked about, the fact that the publisher comes up with this new formula, which is all part of our taking it to the digital future formula. You don't have to. You don't have to accept that amendment, and you really have to compare what they're offering with what you would
Get
get
an attorney to look at whatever they throw at me.
That's good. That's the best advice to yourself right there.
Yes, I got that. I didn't know this organization existed, and I was just thrilled to find out that it did. I belonged to the Authors Guild for a while, and their lead attorney helped enormously on what I believe is this many-page contract that we've gotten one-page amendments to for the last four or five editions. Wow.
We're glad to have you,
Well, this is fascinating. I'm taking notes.
Sarah. Oh, Jamie, did you have something you wanted to say? Sorry, if you
This
didn't.
overlaps contract and royalties. So, getting ready to go into the third edition of our textbook. And we use science writers because we're a journalistic style, and the authors are the co-authors, but we subcontract with a science writer. And the precedence was set on the first two editions that the publisher paid the science writer, the publisher paid for the art and the photographs. Well, now they're saying we have to pay for the science writer out of our royalties and pay for the art, any updates in the art. And that's coming off our royalties. And part of their rationale was because we did the elevated royalty rate for digital. And they're saying we make more than other authors because our royalty rate is higher. And so this helps compensate for that. So it's just sort of a dilemma of how precedence establishes, which I know is more of a contract issue. And they're using a clause in the contract that says that the authors are responsible for any other material that the publisher may reasonably specify, where it doesn't say science writer, it doesn't say art, but they're grouping it under that. So it's probably more of a contract question, but it's also disturbing that we're sort of getting penalized because of our higher royalty rate that we negotiated in 2012 for digital sales. That's above their norm. And I love my publisher, I do, but and I know publishers are struggling, but it's kind of sad it's coming back on authors. So any, I guess just any comments, suggestions, anybody dealing with anything like that?
So this is part of the negotiation back in 2012 that they had the right to then charge for the
2012,
subcontractors.
it was a given they were paying for it. And that's how the contract was presented to us verbally, that they were paying for the science writer. Now they're saying, no, you've been getting a free ride.
Oh, so they're are they relying on the tech the body of the contract to go back and now
Yes.
charge you, even though well
Yeah.
that's where
And
we
we even brought our original acquisition editor from 2012 in, who verified our understanding.
Well, you have certainly have a pretty good argument based on what you've just told us, because the contract may be ambiguous as to who pays for science writers, but the way in which it actually was done, the course of dealing between the author and the publisher over some years is an important piece of evidence in interpreting ambiguities in your contract. And you have a course of dealing in which people have interpreted your contract over the years as to mean that what the publisher does pay for these science writers as part of what it does, and that's not include, and that was not considered to be the other things that have not been mentioned that that clause. So, and of course, I'm just shooting from the hip, and it's much more. You have to look much more closely than that, but certainly your course of dealing. I mean, that comes up in the case that you've. I'm glad to see that whoever has Sierra or others have posted that case that I mentioned today, Second Circuit case. Okay, I mean, it comes up in that case too. For years, McGraw Hill was paying its royalties on the full their full sales proceeds from these Connect versions. That was so if there was any ambiguity in the contract, that's how they were treating it. And then all of a sudden they tell the authors, we're not doing that anymore. Just like your publisher told you, no, we're not doing that anymore. What the Second Circuit case says in a different context, and you can't directly apply this, but the course of dealing over the years is quite important. And that is something that has to be considered. Now,
So it establishes a business practice, Nick?
yes.
Common business practice.
Yes. And I mean, this comes up mainly when a contract is ambiguous. I mean, if the contract was perfectly clear, and also perhaps that, I mean, it's the course of dealing, and maybe that even if the contract might have provided this, they kind of waived that provision since they haven't been applying it for years.
So maybe another beneficial fact is that any ambiguities are interpreted against the drafter of the contract.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's
Absolutely.
another positive factor in your favor.
Interesting. Well, we are still negotiating, and they have now come back and said, well, we'll pay half.
So what's mine is mine, and what's yours is negotiable, huh?
So we just have to decide whether in goodwill we, say okay, or whether we push it harder. So it's just still kind of in motion, but it still was really unsettling.
It's a tricky thing, and another thing that you've said is true of a lot of textbook authors, which is you really like your publisher, which probably means you really like the editors or other people at the publishing company who you've been working with, and you regard them as friends and you trust them. And that's very important. Now, it varies from publisher to publisher, but people feel that way about the big publishers, but at the same time, they sometimes forget that the contract is not with those people. The contract is with a company, often a big company, often a faceless company, and that those people at many of the big publishers come and go. And you don't know whether they will be there next year or not, but your contract is still there. So that's a real dilemma because we want our clients to have good relations with their editors and people at the publishing company. And often that's the most helpful thing, at least has been until very recently, the most helpful thing, having people who are your advocates within the publishing company. That's helped many of our clients. We don't want clients to burn those bridges.
Yeah, I would
But
add to that.
it is tricky for that reason.
Yeah, I mean the editor or the brand manager who's telling you this is usually the messenger from the business unit, right? And they're sort of, shoot the messenger situation. But I think you do have a strong case for the course of dealing. And the fact that they've already gone to 50% tells me they know that it's not a very strong legal position based on the fact that this has been the course of dealing. So now it's really we'd like you to give us to pay for that, but I think they know they don't have a strong position of demanding it based on the contract.
That's a good point, Brenda. And Jamie, one of the things you can do is kind of quantify what these fatal subtractions will amount to, what these
Yeah.
costs would total, what that means to your
Yeah.
world. So,
It's not huge, but it's a cruise. It's quantifiable. So anyway,
maybe there's a
thank
give and
you.
take. Maybe this is
Thank
another. Maybe there's
you.
another point that you would
Yeah,
want. So maybe you
yeah.
give that up in exchange for something else that you want. So just
So Joe, are you in Nashville? I'm in Nashville. So,
no, I travel there, but no,
oh,
I'm
okay.
in California.
Jamie, I will also just add, it's good that they asked you and said that this is what they were planning to do and didn't just start deducting the costs from your royalties and then you'd have to discover it, through an audit down the road. So that's good transparency. If you
Good
want to find
point.
a silver lining in the situation.
Good point. Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Jamie. Now, Laura, did you have your hand up earlier or did I missee that? Sorry to put you on the spot if you didn't have your hand up.
Well, I was going to comment on Sarah's quandary about the averaged royalty that they were trying to get her to accept in a new contract because something similar happened to me, although I ended up not signing the new contract. They were trying to get me to accept less royalty and they calculated a particular percentage of royalty, which was lower than the current rate that I'm getting. And when we asked, how did you calculate that? We being my lawyer and I, we're like, we can't get that same number, is what we said. And then we just never ended up re-signing. So we're still operating under the original contract. So I wouldn't take less than you have now because what good is it for you? I don't know. That's just where, I mean, unless there's some other advantage by, getting more royalty on your digital items because they're specified in your contract that I wouldn't doesn't make sense. They're in my mind.
I think you have to do the calculus, right? You have to run through the math and see applying the 11.7 against all your royalties versus the staged. How does it balance out on the scales? Which way are you getting more money? And the trend too. If the trend is going toward a higher or a lower royalty channel, you may want to consider that too. If things are going more digital, what does that mean for you in the future? Not just now, but going forward. 11.7 versus maybe 15%. It just depends.
a good point.
Very good point.
I don't sign it if you get less out of it. Yeah. We only have about 4 minutes left. If anyone has a quick question they'd like to get in right before the end, now is the time. If you have any comments or anything.
I would just add, I just wanted to add that, Sarah, that I'm also a Pearson author. So
and what
seems
is your
very
book?
Typical.
What is your book?
It's in the chemistry. It's a chemistry,
chemistry.
Book.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Great. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And I'd like to pretend that it was planned, that we had this meeting same day as the results, sort of kind of results came in from the court case. We can pretend
time
that we planned that well. It's so good to see everyone. Thanks for coming. And thank you, Joe, yeah, for being our co-moderator.
Yeah, no, happy to participate and happy to answer any questions that follow this. Just feel free to reach out to me. Happy to be a resource.
Yeah, thank you.
And,
do you want to put your email
and Brenda,
in the chat?
And Brenda and I would too. We're both at together at the Archstone Law Group.
Thank you so much. Here, you can also send out. Is it okay if we send out like your contact information with the post, like the recording promo?
Perfect,
okay,
perfectly so fine with me.
I'll add that.
Great.
If anyone has any questions, they can reach out. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Wonderful.